I want to welcome you back to the Pastoral Care and Marriage class. Today we're going to get into family systems assessment. And what we're going to be looking at is how to dig a little deeper as you're listening to people. The other thing I've noticed is as pastoral care providers, as pastors, leaders, church planters, evangelists, we are not counselors. So even as we are listening and learning about some of the reasons people do what they do, understand that for us, we're going to be dealing with the garden variety types of things often. These are those things where people come to a wall or a marriage is having an argument or someone's asking advice on how to communicate better. And we're going to be able to listen and use many of these skills in family assessment and genogram understandings to really help those in our church and those in our charge. But I want you to know that we're not counselors. So a lot of times we can use these family system tools. And if they're sort of out of our league, if there's a deep, maybe there's a medical issue involved or there's a form of depression that needs medical attention, by all means, this class is not designed to make you psychiatrists. We are about caring for our people. And the more tools that we have, the more we can learn, that's better. So when I talk about family systems assessments, I'm really talking about how to, in general, help people by being even a better listener, finding out those buttons that push people, those things to do to really help people. Now, here's the bottom line. When someone comes to you, or a couple comes for marriage counseling, or there's a family counseling issue, understand that there's a lot of reasons for every behavior. And part of it in your listening, in your questioning, is to basically help people see, as they relate to each other, that there's a lot of reasons people might have behaved how they behaved, how a child may have all of a sudden acted up, how a family got into such an argument that they're now don't know what to do, how a marriage can have such hurt and pain. And it might not even be the hurt or pain of the specific argument. It might be something that's hurt and painful from years and years ago. Every behavior, there's the now, but there's also the past. There's also beliefs and understandings. And I'm going to go over some of those realizations that there are reasons for every behavior. There's a book that I'm taking a lot of this out of that is a suggested reading. It's Why You Do What You Do that you can find in your course outline as a suggested reason. Well, first of all, there's alternative communications than just verbal. And we've got to help people understand that just because what is said is not really what is meant. Actions speak louder than words. The before and after event of current communications have bearing on future communications. So like if when a couple is talking and before this happened, there was great stress, the communications may not be that clear because the stress is louder at that time, or after the communications, something else happened. And then couples, they fast forward a little bit, but there's still those context issues that can affect communications. Every family develops unique communication style to fit their temperaments. You know, for instance, I have Dutch background. It's really interesting. Dutch people don't hug that much, okay? So let's say a Dutch guy marries an Italian woman. Now, I know I'm doing caricatures here, okay? Well, in maybe an Italian family, they're hugging more, and to feel love, there's like a hug. Well, if a Italian woman married a Dutch guy, the Dutch guy is not thinking that she needs hugs. The Dutch guy is thinking she needs to be provided for. Okay, so that's his way of communicating, and his style is much more, at times, rational, not as comfortable with emotion. Whereas her style might be totally opposite. And they got that from their family. A lot of times, when behaviors happen and communication occurs, there's misunderstandings occur that are out there, but they're not really being like looked at. And as a pastor, you know, when the barriers go up, somebody is misunderstanding. And maybe when they come talk to you, what you'll do is you'll help them see where their misunderstandings are at. If someone all of a sudden gets mad, usually there's a misunderstanding behind that. You know, a lot of times it's easy to go and say, "Why are you mad?" You look at the behavior. But there's usually a misunderstanding, and try to do that. Family genograms affect communication, and we're going to talk about that in a further session. Whereas sometimes just the family you come from and what specifically happened in your family affects how you communicate. And there's reasons for someone's behavior. Outside the family rules affect communications too. And that is, I'll give some examples, is there are certain politically correct statements that are just out there. And if you were to say things, you can't say it that way because it's just not accepted to say that way. Maybe it was accepted in the 1950s to say certain things, but it's not acceptable now. Maybe it was never acceptable to say things in the 1950s, and they did it. But if you said that now, it would even be more negative. So there are reasons for every behavior, and every communication issue is part of those reasons. Let's talk then, what lies beneath communication or even conflict? You know, when these issues come, what lies beneath it? What you think, feel, behave are hidden in your actions. And I'll give you a case study on that. Okay, let's say you, as a pastor, come upon a teen pregnancy. Okay? And at one level, the parents and the teen are meeting with you now, and there's all sorts of, like, you know, my daughter got pregnant, and she violated God's law. And okay, there's all of this stuff that's coming. And then as things come out, you find out at the end of the day, that teen got pregnant because that teen was looking for love. And she got pregnant and she doesn't like maybe some of the negative things that have occurred because she was pregnant. But what she deep down loves is that somebody loved her enough and is accepting her. Let's say her boyfriend is keeping her close. Now, that's a little bit of a conflict here. But notice what's underneath are sometimes hidden. You know, even negative things that occur are opportunities to grow and get closer and to bring resolve. It's not saying the teen pregnancy was right. It's not saying it should have happened. Was there sin involved? Yes. All of those things are happening. But as you get communication going and get people talking, you'll discover as a pastor underlying things that you never thought were going to happen, and they just all of a sudden come out, and you can address them. You know, I have seen as a pastor where there's this thing on the surface that comes out, and then like something else comes out, and then finally what comes out is that a father and mother and child are really not connecting, and this negative thing plays itself out for them to be able to talk with one another finally for the first time in a long time. You know, here are some of the things to keep in mind as a pastoral care provider. Every family member has a different understanding even of the family. And that's hilarious to when you see some of the situations. Each personality has different understandings of communication, both verbal and nonverbal. You know, I think about that in my own family. Okay. I have an oldest son who's, you know, actually he's a pastor. He's you know, sharp. But all the qualities of an oldest child. Then I have the next daughter who is a paralegal. And all the qualities of very specific, everything detailed, you know, accountability and, you know, what's actually being said. And then I have a third daughter who is like an artist. Paints, draws, writes, all of those things. a fourth daughter who doesn't fit the pattern of the first three, and then I had a youngest child, five children. Now, I will tell you that each of these personalities communicate differently. If you take my second and my third daughter, put them in the same room, those communication styles are very different, and there can be conflict or misunderstandings just based upon communication style. And when, as a pastor, when we're meeting with people, understand that we need to help them see that. Like sometimes you'll have like a command man father who just can't understand the artist child. And I've said it this way, and this is the way it is. And the artist child is doesn't see the world in those ways. As a pastor, you can kind of help each other understand each other. In a lot of ways, you tailor make your communication style to those you are communicating to. Like, for instance, if you're talking to, you know, a real rigid person, the best thing to do is to understand what he's saying and use the language by which he speaks or she speaks. Don't start, you know, going freestyle, because that person will not trust that what you say will have any impact in their lives. When you're communicating to people and helping and listening to the struggles that they are going through, trying to figure out their family systems a little bit as you're ministering to them, there are several more things that factor into this. And even when you help people communicate to one another, like life experience, good, bad experiences of the past influence how people view each other and how they communicate, how we view people and communicate with each other. You know, I've seen so often somebody will come into even my church, okay, and I'll say something in a sermon. And what I said in a sermon is maybe something about, maybe it's Mother's Day, and you say something about how what a nice experience it was for my mother to make chocolate chip cookies when I was on my 12th birthday, and I talk about that endearingly. And all of a sudden, a gal starts to break down and cries. Or a guy all of a sudden gets closed. So afterwards, you talk with them a little bit, and you find out that on their 12th birthday, the father and mother split in divorce. Okay, now that's a huge past experience, and that past experience now shapes how someone even sees motherness or fatherness. And these are the types of things when you're doing counseling, you're looking at them not because past experiences make someone a victim of those experiences, but understand that those experiences affect communication and behavior. So what are you trying to do as a pastor then? Okay, so what we've talked about so far is, you know, there's underlying reasons people do things. And we'll be talking about that even further. And if you read the book, Why You Do What You Do, you can get even deeper into some of that stuff. But understand as a pastor, what you are trying to do is trying to help your parishioners, those in your charge, to get to that self-awareness so that they're just not reacting and responding to pain, hurt, past issues, but they're actually standing above themselves so they can understand themselves and understand others. You know, what you're going to help them do is to really learning how to get to know themselves, to allow themselves to communicate more effectively. And that's part of even genograms, which we're going to talk about, is part of listening. And help them to be truthful. If there's an untruthful self, it hurts communications. Like you'll find that, you know, I'm not a procrastinator, the wife says. When the reality is everybody knows that she is a procrastinator. She's late to everything. She puts things off. If she says she's going to do a project, it's not at the last minute. But then if she were to announce, I'm not a procrastinator, well, okay, now put that in their marriage. And now you have in the marriage this this problem, that these behaviors that create conflict, when the person is not really truthful about who they are. So part of what you want to do as a pastor is help people get to that self-awareness. You know, how do you do that? Here's a couple of things I've learned over the years. Is be okay with modeling that you understand yourself. I'll often joke with people, yeah, I'm a last born child. You know, oh really? Are you the typical last born? Oh yeah. And then I'll talk about the good and the bad and the ugly of that in a certain winsome way. Yeah, you know, I gotta be the attention of, so much. But on the other hand, you know, that allows me to get bold and do certain things, and I gotta be careful not to talk too much and be the center of attention, and I gotta make sure that other people have the stage. You know, I will be okay with sharing about my self-awareness learnings about myself on things that let the person know that it's okay. It's not shameful to be human. It's not shameful to have strengths and weaknesses. It's not shameful to be honest with who you are. In a relationship, if someone lacks that self-honesty, it's very hard to overcome a lot of walls and barriers. Now, in counseling, what you'll find when people start getting to know themselves, once you help them in doing that, you'll find that the whole emotion issue comes up. And I would say that there's kind of two extremes on the emotion issues. You know, there's the one where somebody's just always emotional and always like throwing up their emotions on everybody else. And then there's the, I'm not comfortable with emotions and I'm not going to, you know, say what I really feel about something. You know, and emotions are made by God. They're made by God to, in a sense, be a barometer of how someone is feeling. Emotions can be trusted to indicate that something might be wrong. Or maybe emotions are merely there to enhance something needs attention. Something's not wrong, but something is not totally right either. God made them. If God made them, they have a purpose, and they have a purpose for our well-being. And as a pastor and leader, you are going to deal with a lot of different emotions. And as you're dealing with emotions, have this concept that emotions are good. Now, a lot of you men out there who are pastors, sometimes you feel, you know, and you can certainly understand that there's trouble with it. You know, you're not necessarily comfortable. But emotions need to be put in balance. You know, if emotions are, if you're only emotions and you're, or your only logic or whatever, both extremes will hurt pastoral care. Each person must learn to understand the basic emotional languages. Now, it's fascinating when you'll find a husband and wife newly married and they're young. In pastoral care, it is so fascinating to me how this whole issue of understanding their emotional language often in that first year of marriage definitely is a struggle for many people. But as a pastor, you want to help people to understand that emotions are good, made by God. Now, what do emotions do? And often emotions are the window into the soul, the window into what someone needs to be healed. I'm just going to go with some emotions and then talk about what the emotions might reveal. Let's just take number one, anger. Now, there are actually positives to anger. If someone has that, you know, that intensity, one positive, many times anger, you stand up for the righteous. Righteous anger is talked about in the Bible. There are causes. When someone gets angry, there's often a boundary alert system. Like if someone angers you, they might be hurting yourself or themselves in violating a very important boundary. Shortly in this class, we're going to talk all about boundaries. And then you can come back to this and know what I'm talking about. So I don't want to get into what boundaries are yet. We're going to wait until Dr. Drew Brown talks about this later in the class. Anger could alert a hormonal alert system, and where something inside a person biologically needs attention. But anger can also have negatives. If somebody gets angry about something, I'm so mad! Okay, it could be that there's a hurt deep inside. There's a past hurt. There's a bitter root, or the beginning of a bitter root that's in there. That boundary broken was there. Maybe there was an abuse issue. See, a lot of people have said that anger is hurt externalized. If somebody's angry about something, on one level you can say, don't be angry. What do you? You shouldn't be angry. Or the other way is you can, as a pastor, so that really bugs you. Why? And you, because they're angry, will get insights into how to bless them, help them, encourage them, give them a scripture, pray for them. If you just sort of like, I'm uncomfortable with anger and I don't want to deal with it, in a sense, you're cutting off the potential to really get deeper into communications. Let's take another one, jealousy. You know, there's a positive side to jealousy. God says, I'm a jealous God. You know, one positive is it speaks to the need for affirmation. Look, I'm God, the Lord says. There's nobody else. And I am to be praised and glorified, God says, nobody else. But there's also a negative. You know, people can be jealous for no reason or constantly compare them their insecurities. Now, you can say to someone, you know, you shouldn't be jealous, Marge. Or you can actually listen, why are you jealous? And in the motions, give insights. They give the reasons behind the behaviors. You know, earlier I talked about various reasons and I didn't really get into, you know, some of the insights. But jealousy can be an insight into why someone does what they do. Guilt. If someone feels like, I really feel guilty. Now, on the positive is if there's needed remorse and needed forgiveness, God puts that guilt in there. But on the negative, somebody might be too hard on themselves. Maybe they get depressed. Maybe they're hopeless. Maybe it brings up issues about unrealistic guilt that came into their lives when they're like overly hard on themselves, even going beyond what the Bible talks about with, you know, how to live our lives. But guilt. So when someone says, I feel really guilty, you know, our knee-jerk reaction is to just deal with the emotion. Well, Jesus paid it all. Okay. Or we say, okay, why do you feel guilty? You know, maybe you need to call up George and say, George, I am sorry. I hurt you. Or maybe it's like a person was raised their whole life never being able to please their father and mother, and their father and mother, you know, use the Bible or God card against them. And so then what happens is they feel, no matter what they do, they feel guilty or bad. Well, now the guilt emotion allowed you to find out what was the reason behind some of these behaviors. Pride, it's emotion. Now, on the positive, you know, personal accomplishments, desire to excel, all those things are wonderful. But the negative, pride can be selfishness, too high of ego, diminished importance of others. Now, it's really simple to say, you know, you're being awfully proud about that, be careful. Or you can say, you know, you're proud about that and acknowledge the good. But have them talk and find out that place where that pride doesn't go too far. And if it exposes something, you can minister to that which is exposed. Worry, very common emotion. Now, there's a positive to worry, genuine concern, protectiveness. But there's also negatives. When someone worries, it's easy to say, stop worrying. The Bible says we should not worry. Well, maybe there's irrational fears and paranoia, and the people we worry about may feel smothered even. causes health issues. See, when someone comes to us, these emotions are given by God to help us minister to people, to help us understand what is behind some of the behaviors. It takes communication at a deeper level. If you allow emotions to be expressed, you're going to be able to communicate and teach others to communicate even stronger. Without emotions, communication often is one-dimensional. With emotions in there, you get more insights. And it's fascinating. Let's just take one. You know, I'll throw an extra one in here. Let's just take lust, okay? Or desire. Maybe the emotion should be desire. Now, on the positive side, it's like desire could be like, you know, created by God to, be human, be sexual within marriage and all these other things. Okay. On the negative, lust, we would call it, could be like looking to own someone else. You know, looking to objectify the opposite sex. The visual that God makes you goes too far. Okay, now, somebody comes to you and they say, Pastor, you know, help me with my lust. Okay. Then you could say, well, just don't lust, and, you know, or you could just kind of dismiss it. Or you could help them to dig deep. What's really going on there? What really is a way to get that health in order, to get into the window of their heart in order to support them and encourage them? The function of emotions, it's awfully tempting to say, you know what, just don't feel that way. Instead, encourage the person more in the line of, emotions are good, but emotions are not everything. Okay? Emotions give us more communication, but understand that these are to be in balance. And to not be afraid of emotions. God made emotions for a very important reason. And one more thing. Encourage your people, as well as yourself, that emotions are under the lordship, the saviorship, and the priesthood of Christ. That even the emotions are just not good in terms of, because they're emotions. They're created good, that is, that we have emotions, but some of the emotions are not founded. Some of the emotions, you know, you need to create a world and an atmosphere where balance is there, in that the lordship of Christ is even over emotions, while at the same time recognizing that emotions are made by God and they're very good. You know, I want to end with most of my presentations with a case study. And today's, I couldn't help but give the case study on emotions. Okay, so here's the case study. Bubba and Tammy come in, and they are newly married, and they have a major conflict after 3-4 months. And the man is just like totally shutting down. And he reports, I just don't know what to say to her, he says. And what do you mean, Bubba? And Bubba says, well, I say this, and she right away flies off the handle. And I say that, and she right away flies off the handle. And so you start talking, and then his wife speaks up and says, I'm just being transparent. And I'm just telling you, you know, I'm just telling Bubba the way it is. And I'm comfortable, and he's not. You know, and Bubba, he does have, you know, 5 emotions, bad, glad, sad, mad, and that's it. And he's okay with that. But his wife has thousands of emotions. And she's got sub-emotions. You know, her mad emotion has like 25 different nuances. Okay? So now you have it. You got blue and you got pink together. And they're in your office. Now, you know, you can't leave them and say, you know, man, you're just going to have to start learning how to feel what your wife is feeling. There's no way that guy's ever going to do that. And the woman, you know what? You just have to have less emotions like your husband. Okay? Goodbye. See you later. Nah, not going to work. So what do you do? Well, here's what I've learned over the years. For the man, I pretty much encourage him to do not see emotions as threats. That's the crucial first thing. And that when his wife expresses her emotions, intentionally listen and appreciate and learn what exactly she is trying to say and try to recount back to her. So you're feeling this way, honey. Okay? And for a guy, I often say, is a lot of times just the makeup of many women is they just want to be hugged. They just want to express their emotions and they don't want you to fix them. So one of the things I encourage guys to do is don't look down on emotions and don't try to fix them. Now, there's some great books on this this very case study. You know, Love and Respect deals with a lot of these types of things. Many of the writings of Gary Smalley deal with these kind of like issues. And basically, I would recommend to you as a pastor or leader is get some more information about this. But the bottom line, you want the guy to not feel that their wife's emotions, and often it's that type of thing, is some bad thing. But those emotions, and try to help him see those emotions reveal more to him on how to love her. Now, for a woman, I would say, don't try to fix him either. Some of the great traits about being a man is that their minds are not clouded by all kinds of emotions. And that, and don't try to, like, constantly badger him about what he's feeling, because many times he doesn't know what he's feeling, and that's a good thing in the marriage. Now, does this mean that a guy should not learn how to get more emotions and understand them? No, he should. It doesn't mean that a woman should not try to like hold back and be a little more balanced in her emotional response. Yeah, that would be good. But understand that you're not going to change each other to be the other person. You married a man, you married a woman. That gender, that difference was made by God. And to understand that pink and blue divide takes years. And to rest in the comfort that God has designed it that way. And over time, you will, as a couple, learn more about how a blue communicates, how a pink communicates, how man and woman together subdue the earth. You know, I would say communications and family systems, and as we get into genograms and we get into other things, understand this. What you're trying to do is trying to help people communicate, help people to understand that self-awareness so that they're just not reacting in their emotions or flying off the handle, but more and more communicate. And as a pastor, you can't fix everything. Even the stuff that you learn today, you just can't apply it and say, I'm going to fix every marriage, every family, every hurt. No, all you're doing is getting more into communication, understanding more on how people think, and helping them to be able to voice to each other their hearts, their dreams to one another. So that's it for today. And as you think about this, here's sort of, it's not really an assignment, but with your spouse or someone, the next time emotions come up and everything like that, instead of just sort of fixing them, try a little bit of what we talked about in the class. Why do you feel angry? Why do you feel hurt right now? What is that about? In a non-judgmental inquisitiveness, and you'll be surprised. You're going to learn a lot, not just about how to be a better pastoral care provider. You're also going to be a better person in terms of how you'll communicate with others.